sex magic, what it is, is the art of shifting your attention and your intention. Sex magic is engaging our sexual erotic response as like a microphone in the universe, of saying like, okay, I'm gonna actually heighten my energy and my attention right now and like plug in my sound system.
Hello, beloved listeners. This is Adrian, writer of stories and songs, witch, emergent strategist, pleasure activist, and magical unicorn thinker, living in the land of the Shikori, Skururé, Tuscarora, Eno, and Lumbee peoples, among others. This is How to Survive the End of the World, our podcast about learning from apocalypse with grace, rigor, and curiosity. When I say our, I'm shouting out my sister Autumn, who's currently on sabbatical. In her absence, and in honor of my book Fables and Spells, I'm going full witch this season and having conversations with some of my favorite witches and teachers. And I'll also read you little bits and pieces from the book as we go. What I mean by witch is people who work with the elements of the natural world, including our human nature, to generate more possibilities. And we've had all kinds of guests on this podcast, all kinds this season, but I don't think we've had anyone quite like we have today. I'm super excited about this. And the person that I'm bringing on is Z Chris, and this is someone who I've actually known for a gazillion years because they went to school with Autumn. And Autumn is the one who was like, you know, Z needs to be up in this mix. And I was like, Z needs to be up in this mix. So Z is the founder of embodymorelove.com, a spiritually kinky dance community for personal and cultural liberation, and a practitioner of sex magic. And we're going to go into the sex magic realm today. And
yeah!
I'm so fucking excited about the Z.
Thank you.
Like, I feel like we need some kind of massive orgasm to shake loose the entire world right now. So
we do.
Let's just start out with, how are you right now today?
Well, I just had one. Getting ready.
Perfect. That's how we do. That's how we get ready for speeches, you know?
Yes. Yes. I'm so grateful. I'm so excited to be participating in this culture that you and Autumn have been building. It's a deep honor. And
thank you.
Yeah. And I'm tender too, because I also watched the news this morning and
yeah.
I thought, wow, we're gonna be talking about sex magic today, you yeah. know? And I trust us with this conversation. Yeah. So I'm excited.
Yeah, good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I keep thinking or hearing my teacher Grace Lee Boggs in my mind saying, what time is it on the clock of the world? And it feels like this time of great turning, great unveiling and great turning. And I keep sitting in the mixture of pride. I think pride is the word of looking around at the movements that have built over the last 20 years and the analysis that has sharpened and the solidarity that we have learned to show for each other and just being blown away at the scale of action and the depth of conversation and how much people are like, you know, there's stuff we can do online, but there's so much we need to do offline. And I'm just really moved by that. And then every day devastated by the number of people who are dying as we figure this out and as we fight and as we push. So, yeah, it feels like the best of times and the worst of times. And
yes.
And by the best of times, it's like, it's the possibility of the time, right? That I'm like, I can feel in this moment that a lot of veils are being pulled back for people that are just like, it's like, this is the heart, you know, this genocide that's ongoing right now is the heart of this change. And people are like, oh, these folks lied to us. Like they really don't tell us the truth and they really don't listen to us. And when that's the case, it's like, what are we going to do? And so I'm really interested because I'm like activists and organizers and artists and witches are going to change the world.
I
know that when I'm using this language of witch, that some people are like, yeah, that's my bag. That's how I identify. And some are like, that's not really my thing. Like, I'll indulge you. So I wanted to ask you, how do you identify the work that you do in relationship to that terminology? Do you use other terminology for it? Yeah. How do you identify it?
I feel like more of a magician and a gender magician, a love magician, a waking the heart of our human family magician. And I respect and honor witchcraft. My relation to that word has grown in listening to this series.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, as you were speaking to the veils getting pulled back, that's also where the magic becomes more felt.
Yeah.
It's both. So I think that's part of being a magician, being an artist with our attention and not turning it so far into our dreams that we lose sight of what is happening in the world that is painful, and also not turning it so deeply into the physical reality of now that we lose sight of possibility and dream. And that expansion is where the magic happens.
I love that. That's right. Yeah. Like in a world which makes us want to contract and contract and contract.
Yes.
So when did you realize that this was your path? When did you realize you were drawn towards this particular way of expanding?
Well, when I was six.
Wow.
I've been reflecting on this, right? And
yeah.
And I definitely I didn't know the word orgasm. I didn't know the word masturbation. I knew I was a butterfly. I knew I could state change.
Yeah.
Okay. And I would flap my knees like butterfly wings. And that was part of the rocking, right? That was, I would be climbing the pole at school, you know,
yeah.
Or I'd be in the, under the, on the banister in my basement at home or in the bathtub. And I was like, oh, I can be a butterfly. I can change my state. And later I started learning the language of sexuality to recognize that like more of a language context for what I was doing.
Yeah.
And as I have been reflecting this week, I'm sitting here with an altar of the lineages and ancestors because I was listening in for what needs to come through. And the truth is that I've never met anyone who does their magic the way I do. And I didn't know it was possible as a kid. So there wasn't just one moment, right? It was like a lot happened in my 20s and a lot happened in my mid 30s. And I could look back and see these moments of expansion where I started to experience communal rituals of joy that had space for grief in them. And that expanded so much of like, oh, I see. Okay, I knew how to be a butterfly by myself, but now I know how to be a butterfly with a community. Now I know how to be a butterfly that actually accumulates the flight inside of me so I can draw on it at any time.
Yes.
And invoke it. And yes.
That's beautiful. So I really appreciate the you know, when I think about looking at children and being like, you have magic in you. Like, we all know children have magic in them. And,
yes.
and I think we both are always trying to balance, like, knowing they have magic and trying to keep them safe. And I think a lot of times that keeps us from being able to actually create space for the development of their magic or really expand into themselves. Right. I think that we are like, oh, you have magic, but we need to discipline you and we need to make you fit into a smaller and smaller and smaller box. And so it's really interesting to hear this piece around. And then in my 20s, something unfolded. And then in my mid 30s, something unfolded, because I do think there's this way of being like, almost all the witches I talked to were like, I knew when I was a kid,
that
something was magic and I was up to something. And then I had to basically socialize into society and then find my way back to magic. So as you found your way back into practice, are there people that you could call on as witch ancestors? Are there any lineages that feel formal that you draw upon? I know that you mentioned that there's this intuitive aspect and that you haven't seen anyone who quite did it the way that you did.
I want to respond to something you just said in terms of being around children, in that the more comfortable we as adults are with our own magic, the less scared we get around our children's magic. And like, that is so important. So, you know, in fact, sometimes those moments of discomfort in the presence of our children's magic are like gifts to us to be called into being bigger in ourselves. And yeah, so, okay. But I mean, I could spend the whole hour just talking about my ancestors and lineages, and I want to be mindful that there's more here. But there's so much support for me, for us. The two loudest voices that just have direct communication to my heart are my grandmother Dottie, and Sabanfu Somme. And I giggle a little because grandma didn't like the word witch, like, you know, but I, and yet I still felt her. I still felt her in this question. Right. Yeah. And I remember, it's in the cackle. It's in the way we laugh. It's the bigness of life that comes out through our joy. And my grandmother, I remember the only time in her life she let me massage her. She was 88. She had just had surgery in both her eyes and she couldn't move her neck a certain way. And she finally let me touch her. And I was a body worker at that stage of my life. And her belly started getting really loud, which happens when you hit parasympathetic, when your body hits relaxed. And she just looks at me and she goes, "Are you a witch?" And we just start laughing, both of us, right? And I never answered her, but there was this sense of my grandmother was an activist into her 90s. We had a lifetime of protesting together. She went around the world to locate herself inside of a human world that was bigger than the US constructs. She was an activist. And she was also someone who knew joy. She had all of these rituals and feasts and Passover seders. And she taught me the history of who I come from without the hatred of who my enemies might be, right? And I say that as a Jewish person right now today, very consciously, right? And so I feel her with me. I feel her chutzpah. She's my chutzpah companion. Yes, Sabanfu Somme is also someone I met who really changed my life in a way I didn't expect. She brought grief rituals here. She's from the Dagara people of Burkina Faso. And I came to her after breaking up with my fiance and being in the grief of the life I thought I was going to have with love, you know? And even though Sabanfu located herself as a grief ritualist, I think what she actually was teaching was how to be village again, how to heal from five generations of individualism, as Joanna Macy would say. And that experience of we are not alone in what we're grieving. And this, I had never seen people willing to feel their pain and willing to transform it into love at such a large scale and such a heart-centered scale. It was so different than the energies of a lot of activism I had been in prior. And so once Sabanfu became an ancestor, I started leading a lot of grief ritual, and I kept thinking like, wow, I would go to grief ritual in the day and play parties at night, and I'd be like, yo, this is the same energy. This is that deep love opening. And I even talked to Sabanfu about it before she passed. And I was like, excuse me, like, you know. And she was also one of the few elders, and she wasn't even that old. She was in her 40s. I just need to say that too, because
that's
but
so
in
young.
Yes, she was one of the few elders in the African diaspora that also embraced all genders, you know, and that was also really affirming. And so I said, you know, why is it the more I grieve, the less I experience my gender? And she said, because grief dissolves all your limitations and opens up possibility. And so that began these, like, the next 15 rituals that I was doing in person and online around grief and Eros, and we're making a film to carry forth her legacy. But that space of what I call trembling open, right?
Yeah.
Like laughter, yeah. Grief, orgasm, that the body's literally like, shall I hold on? Shall I expand? Shall I hold on? Shall I expand? You know? Yes. When love opens.
I really love that. And thank you for honoring her, and thank you for honoring your grandmother. And it kind of always blows me away how far we are moving things in our lifetime, and in a lifetime. And to think about, you know, I think about this all the time with language. I think about this now with gender. I think about this with patriarchy. I think about this with, you know, our sense of what it means to be an embody, to live inside of a body that has its particular journey on earth, and how sometimes in some ways I can understand that every single construct is one that is keeping us from our power and our magic, right? So I'm like, oh, like, as you, well, I can speak for myself, but I think I hear this in what you're saying as well, as I drop more and more into what is truly powerful in me, I have less and less need for any aspect of construct. Like, I just recognize that. I'm like, oh, all of that is the temporary aspect of myself, and the eternal aspect of myself is this interconnected being that delights in getting to experience all the things.
Yes.
So, speaking of delight, what are all the ways you currently do your witchy work?
Oh, well, I know I didn't mention like the other seven people and lineages, right? And I think what I will say is that I grew up in the African dance community and diasporic community. And so one of the primary ways, I'm a dancer, you know, and I like, so the way everything that I share is still through dance. That's my first language.
Yeah.
And I have had the honor of experiencing dance in so many different cultures, Middle Eastern, West African, ballet, modern, Sufi dance, meditation. And all of that helped me better understand how a culture, even without words, is defining what a body is.
Oof.
Even without words, is defining who gets to feel beautiful. Who gets to feel sexy?
Mm-hmm.
Who gets to feel joy? Who gets to feel celebrated in their improvisational nature?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so if the dance communities I was in could be perpetuating the socialization, they could also be creating the liberation. So my work has been about creating dance spaces that invite us to recognize we are all magical, we're all socialized, and now we get to be in that unveiling of our essence.
Yes.
So that work looks like different things. My favorite thing right now is called clay. It's a 3-month immersion. I'm a kink educator. And basically, I took a bunch of my anti-racism and gender education and activism and shifted it into a kink immersion because I found that people, one, were having way more fun, and two, that when we feel loved for who we really are and what we really want, all of our movements get stronger.
Yeah.
So play, it's the whole thing is called play with power and gender through dance.
Okay.
But basically, you know, we're changing a history of mistrust where dominance and submission has been mainly seen for its abuse, for its shadow. And yet dominance and submission are actually part of our nature, part of nature itself. And the level of trust and design and consciousness and belonging that we can offer each other through kink to say, you know, you still belong. You get off on that, you still belong.
Yeah.
You're scared about that, you still belong.
Here you are.
So yes, yes. So that is this kinky dance immersion that I love doing in person, but I also work with individuals and couples in love coaching, and specifically in the areas of secure attachment, which we could go deep into, right? And has changed the way I understand anti-oppression work because we were doing it in ways that kept rupturing relations. So yes, yeah, secure attachment, gender beyond the binary, conscious power exchange, personal and systemic, that is. And then I'm having a moment because sometimes
it's amazing when we create these systems and we're like, wait, how do
I know, right? I know there's a fourth one. And I have a brain injury and sometimes things are slower, and that's also okay. So
it'll come back to you when you stop.
It will come back.
It,
yeah.
Yeah. That's how I am. I'm just like, well, if I leave.
Oh my gosh. But the other way that I really do my work is through grief and Eros rituals. And we just made a film that is going to be coming out soon to give people more of that felt experience of seeing bodies tremble open, holding each other. And that film has these four pillars around healing what needs to be grieved personally, collectively, and ancestrally around race, gender, secure attachment, and Eros. Those are those four pillars. So yeah, doing those rituals. And, you know, when Sabanfu and Maladoma came here, you know, they carried this sense of, if you want to protect yourself from the enemy, you teach the enemy to grieve. And this was not just about an emotional education, you know,
you say
grief
that one more time. Yeah.
If you want to protect yourself from the enemy, teach the enemy how to grieve. So this was a gift we were given, and receiving this gift, right? Grief, I think in the West, some people think of it as just an emotion, but in Sabanfu's context, it's a spiritual cleansing. And I would say the same of sex magic. It's a spiritual cleansing that brings us back to act from love. Yeah. So carrying that forth, you know, we have that responsibility to carry that forth. We were gifted that.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Wow. That's, you know, when you hear something, you're like, that is fathoms deep. That is way down in there. And, you know, it was basically like so much of what you're talking about with your work is, I think of it as decolonization work, but it's like going down into, you know, for me, I'm like, I'm going into my pelvic floor and decolonizing. I'm going into the root and decolonizing, which necessitates that the rest of my body then shakes into a different way of being in the world and my spirit and my soul and my work. And I've been finding that I'm like, oh, I'm able to be much braver because I am grieving completely. Like I'm giving myself total room to grieve. And that grief puts me in direct relationship with what feels true and what matters in the world. And that allows me to then speak. And then I get the delight of being in community, having spoken truth, and the truth tellers, right, stand out. And you can find each other and hold on to each other. And I have been finding that, there's just way that things are bubbling up that I'm like, oh, then the truth tellers are the ones who then create some solid ground for people to step onto when they're scared. And they're like, but this is familiar. And out there is something new and different. It's like out here is something decolonized. So it's new and different and ancient and true. It, all that is happening, right?
And when they do, when they've done studies on soldiers, their pelvic floors are a mess. Yeah. You know, like just the to further that image, right? It's like when we are scared, when we are so removed from our true nature, the pelvic floor like gets tight, you know, and it's like, it's not just uncomfortable, it's literally all our vital organs are right above it. So it affects that flow of life energy. Yes.
I love that.
Hello, beloved survivors. This is Autumn. I'm emerging briefly from the new home I made for myself in the forest among the gnomes and the fae and magical creatures of all kind, to remind you that if you listen to this show regularly, you might consider making a gift to support our work in 2024. And I'll tell you a little bit about why. Adrienne and I and our producer, Zach, have always felt strongly that we can best protect the content of our show by being listener-supported rather than ad-sponsored. Being financially supported by the people who are most directly impacted by our show means that we can fearlessly move towards the most difficult topics, the most challenging conversations, and the most courageous edges of the time we are living through. From our apocalypse survival episode on the right to arm and defend ourselves, which aired in the midst of the 2020 uprising, to our 2023 ceasefire episode on the genocide being perpetrated on the Palestinian people in Gaza, we have maintained our show as a place to hold out visionary possibility with our eyes trained on liberation for all oppressed peoples. That's because we aren't worried about being dropped or canceled. We know that the people who most need to hear us can and will hear us, and that's because of you. So we want to thank you, all of you, who support our show in all of the myriad ways that you do it. And we want to invite those of you who haven't yet to consider making a sustaining gift via Patreon. In exchange, you do get some sweet, cute merch, plus access to content that we record only for patrons. So you can go to patreon.com/endoftheworldshow to learn more. And if you're wondering if I'm coming back, I'm coming back.
Okay, so we have affected the flow. We're moving these things. Mm-hmm. Now we are in this like apocalyptic time. And you know, when we started this podcast, it already was like, oh, we're in this apocalyptic time. We know that we're in this time. And I'm so grateful that we opened the conversation when we did, because things just keep getting more and more heightened, more and more revealed, more and more unveiled, more and more unstable feeling. And right now there's this real true understanding of what's happening with the climate. And there's this real true sense of what's happening with war, those who really wish to continue to hold on to the final pieces of colonization and keep moving in that way. And then those who are like, no, you know, we want that to be behind us now. So I'm curious what you would say are the skills you wish everyone had in this moment? Like, what is the skill or practice you wish everyone was in this moment?
Yeah. I've been really sitting with this. The world is already unfamiliar to us, right? Like a pre-COVID world has already died. A world before this level of genocide in the Middle East has already died, right? Yeah. So when we think about the end of the world, for who, right? Because so when we think about your listeners, this incredible culture that is connected to these values of love and liberation and humility and generosity that I feel through you, you know, it's like, okay, for if that's the who, we get bigger. We get bigger. And what I mean by that is every moment that we stumble into realizing the way we've been socialized is not who we actually are. We are practicing getting bigger, right? And that getting bigger is also something that, you know, there's this sense that people think that over time grief will get smaller or the sense of apocalypse will get smaller. But what if that's not how it works? What if it stays as big as it does? Maybe it even gets bigger. But what's different is that we start to connect into something that is bigger than how we've known ourselves to be, that is bigger than the familiar, that is connected to love, that moves us, right? And I want to speak to, I imagine everyone listening has had a moment of initiation in this way, a moment of realizing, whether it's the first time maybe you thought you were cisgendered and it's the first time you realize gender is so much bigger than the binary and that it's a construct, or maybe it's the moment you're a white person and you're finally a minority in a larger context of a global majority of Black and brown bodies, and you're having your whoa moment, right? Or maybe it's the moment you thought you were able-bodied and you had your first really big injury or your first disability, right? And each of these moments, when it happens, that is actually an initiation into how to be with apocalypse. Because it's like, wait a minute. Okay. Often we go through that like shock, anger, shame, bargaining, grief, but then they don't talk about this part as much. Then there's actually a surrender into being more connected to what is true. And when that happens, we have a different quality of presence and we have a different capacity to move energy and we have a different way to be online with the resources of the spirits and the elements and the energy of love that's around us. All of that starts to open up. And often we stumble through that doorway like, yo, shit, I thought it was this other way. You know?
And I love that. And I mean, you know, something that's coming to me clearly is when that stumbling happens, often then we hyper connect to that one piece of the transition, right? So it's like, I am now an anti-racist white person. I am now a disability justice person. I am now a queer and trans activist. You know, it's like, I'm going to pick the one piece of identity that unlocked that door for me. And then that's going to become the centerpiece of who I am, which I think for many people then is about a decade that you spend in that place before you're like, oh, it's all the things.
Yes. Hopefully.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think I know what you mean.
And it goes in both directions. And what I mean by that, both is tricky because I don't want to create another binary, but I want to say is, in the sense that like all the examples I just gave were examples of realizing you've been normalized, but the same is also true for moments of initiation into realizing you've been marginalized. And What I mean by that is, for me as a non-binary person, to see the possibility that I can be in spaces where people of all genders who are even brand new to deconstructing their gender socialization could care.
Yeah.
And that we could actually experience a kind of solidarity that is bigger than any one identity, that is about dismantling the construct. So there's actually more space for all of our magic to be magicking, right? And that is also a kind of death in a way, right? That is also a kind of getting bigger.
Yeah.
And that's also a very vulnerable thing sometimes to go into that expansion of love, because sometimes we think, oh, did it just lose its precision that made me look credible? You know? And yet, like, that intersectionality, it is like when we go into the body and we experience the opening that sex magic can offer us. I know we haven't gone deep into that yet, but there is something that is so much bigger than any challenge or perception of threat or limitation of who we thought we were, that we now get to begin to recognize is also us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is one of the most effective ways.
So
yes.
Let's go in. Let's drop in there, right? So if you're talking about sex magicking for people in this moment, just break it down. What do you mean by that? What does it look like to practice sex magicking on your own? How do you know when you're at a threshold and you can, right, keep going in deeper, keep opening wider? Because I think for some people, it's like, so you talk about just bust a nut, that's magic. Like, tell me what, you know? And I think that, I would love for you to speak a little bit more about the specific practice.
Yeah. Well,
practices.
One lineage I didn't shout out yet is Barbara Carillis, who was the first Tantra teacher who really helped me understand that Tantra started as early as 5,000 years ago in the context of a socio-political revolution in India against the caste system. And I want to name that right now, because I think we can distort what we think Tantra is or what we think sex magic is. And yet its ancient context was the very thing we're talking about right now, in a system where your value is ranked externally. How do you dare to come back into your body and be like, oh yeah, source is right here, and I am connected to this, and literally I am changing the pathways in my brain to orient to possibility and to love. And like, our bodies are designed for this. Our bodies are designed to love, and our bodies are designed to play. And our bodies are designed to meet to meet these moments where we are told we're smaller than we are, and to say, nah, I know how to dance like this. I know how to breathe like this. I know how to touch like this, right? Like, we're actually designed for that. So sex magic, what it is, magic is the art of shifting your attention and your intention. And sex magic is engaging our sexual erotic response as like a microphone in the universe, of saying like, okay, I'm gonna actually heighten my energy and my attention right now, and like plug in my sound system, right? And say, okay, I am building this breath, this aliveness, this opening. And a lot of people, you know, even our understanding of what sex is gets colonized, right? We think it's just about genitals. We think it's just about inserting and whatever, you know, but it's about like deeply our human nature to share joy and aliveness in ways that transform us. And it is a whole being experience. So what we're doing is, We are opening our bodies to receive the love that is around us and to focus it towards what we are intending. And we can use that in so many different ways. And maybe you're an artist and you're like, what's the next song that's going to come through? What's the next dance? Okay, Sabanfu, what's the next thing you need me to do? A film? Really? Oh, you know, that
yes.
It's a listening channel. It's a listening
yes.
space, right?
Yes.
And it may or may not include touching your genitals, right? That I all
yeah.
that is
yeah.
part of it, right? If you want it to be. But essentially what it is expanding your breath, your internal opening to that energy moving up the midline of your body. And what moves energy is attention, but it's also softening, right? One of my friends when I was getting ready for this was like, do you do sex magic or does sex magic do you? And I loved that question because there is like you know, when you're trying to like, I got to get it. I only have 5 more minutes. I'm trying to like push for my orgasm, you know, like, or you're trying to drive, or
absolutely.
like, yo, my partners are going to come soon. And I got, you
I
know,
got
and
it.
that,
Yep.
like, that, you know, can actually constrict the energy.
Yep.
So sex magic is about being an invitation for life and love to flow through you. It being the invitation. And a lot of that has to do with softening. So literally softening up the body, like softening the belly so that erotic energy can rise higher, softening the diaphragm so it can rise up into the heart, softening the throat so it can rise up. Like, it is the softening that I'm willing to let life and love flow through me. And often that's when we start to grieve. That's when we start to feel things we weren't feeling before, because we're saying, I'm willing to be here.
That's right.
I'm
The
willing to
number of
feel.
times that I have had an orgasmic release that allowed me to grieve something. And
Yes.
where I was like so surprised and like, you know, when I was younger, it would happen and I would be like, I'm so sorry to whoever my person was, because I'm like, that was so good what you just did. And now, yes, I'm bawling and it's not about this. And it is about this. And it's also about, you know, my grandfather dying or whatever, you know. And,
yes.
But recognizing that, you know, which I think is also going to bring me a little bit into my next question for you. For especially those of us who have different levels of sexual trauma, those who have, for all kinds of intelligent reasons, right, kind of stepped out of the body, stepped out of sex being a place of true safety or intimacy or connection, right? I want to ask you what it looks like to practice sex magic while healing your relationship to sex, right? While healing your relationship to pleasure in your body.
I love that. Thank you for that question. Well, safety is one of those doorways. Like, one of the things I think our culture tends to show us sex at its peak state as it is at a very fast and accelerated state. And yet the doorway that we don't usually see is the slowness, the softness, the grounding before the opening, whether you have trauma or not. And particularly bodies that are going to be receiving penetration, whether that's from self or a toy
yeah.
or a person, that softening is so important. So what I would say for folks who are in that healing space, I'm going to circle back to this opening to a larger support system. Can I feel gravity in my pelvis? Can I feel that the earth wants me to be here? And the gravity is her holding me in. What parts of my body feel open and available to connection right now? Right. And I don't have to start with my pelvis. You
that's
know,
right. That's often. I was just like, maybe sometimes that's the last place you'll get to.
I have had many people in my workshop say, "Wow, I thought I was asexual my whole life until this workshop, and the entryway that we came in was actually with nature. Can I go outside and receive the energy from a tree?
That's right.
Can it, right? Can I, and can I, oh, I like how the sun feels in my body. How does my body let me know that?" Right? So listening in, because the soul doesn't have words, it talks to us through sensation and visions. And
Yes.
so noticing, like, oh, my body likes something. How does
Yeah.
it let me know? May or may not have to be directly sexual yet,
Yep.
right? Yet's the wrong word because it puts pressure that we have to get somewhere. But that is also part of the magic of what I'm talking about. Can I go stand out in a thunderstorm and feel the aliveness
Yeah.
that I am a part of? Can I open to that, right? And then what I would say is that compression and containment are really delicious for lots of people, and especially people who are actively wanting to increase a sense of safety in their arousal experience. So, getting in a weighted blanket,
Yes.
nuzzling your head up into a surface that you can kind of like put a pillow and like press up into, like, oh yeah,
You
this
feel
is
it
my body.
contained.
Because a lot of Eros is about energy expanding, and if we don't feel safe in our body, then we can just leave. So the first thing that I would do with someone is say, oh, let's imagine there's a big gossamer net gathering you, like it would gather butterflies, gathering all of your energy, and let's try on that your body is a safe place to be just for the next 5 minutes. That the universe is a safe place to be just for the next 5 minutes, right? And maybe put on some music that you really like to groove to. And can I just be in this space and hold myself and feel some rhythm of life moving through my body in a way that feels good? Like,
That's
let me
right.
just start there,
That's
you
right.
know? And then whatever happens, thanking your body. Like, hey,
Yeah.
body, thank you for letting me be with you for those 5 minutes.
That's right.
Right? Like, so those are some starting places. And I also want to share, I'm about to teach trauma-informed age play in a few days. There's
Very
so many
good.
layers to this with kink, right? But
Yeah.
ultimately, presence, like when you asked me earlier about what is this main skill set I want people to have, I realize I didn't get to all of that yet. But presence is one of those first things, which is noticing when we have left presence. And that can be like leaving, but it can also be merging with someone else. It can be intensifying. There's these five different patterns of how our energy can leave our body. And they're friggin' amazing. Stephen Kessler's book on the five patterns, and that's another lineage that I've been working with Tini Dakini, and that's such a powerful call back to presence, and it is related to healing trauma in the sense that trauma is this kind of unprocessed life experience where we left ourselves, right? And so part of the nature of sex magic, and this is kind of like a different angle of the same question you just asked, is that being in the body is inherently supports trauma healing. Because being like, oh, I'm going to open to my essence, I'm going to feel life in my body. And sometimes just placing your hands around your skin and being like, I live here, I'm a sacred instrument, I live in here.
That's
Or
right.
saying your name is a way of like, okay, how do I grow my capacity to be here?
Yeah.
And pleasure can be like, oh my God, like life could be this good, like being a body could feel this good.
That's
Like,
right.
and that is a worthy exploration
I
to
think
start
so
to
too.
open to. Like, yeah.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that, Z. I mean, it's just all so useful. It feels so tangible, and it feels like there's just such an invitation in all of the work that's like, this is possible for you in your lifetime, right? That yes. also is one of my favorite aspects of sex magic is, you know, I'm like, there's a lot of things that may or may not be possible for us in our lifetime, but this is something that's possible. Like, I'm like, you can drop in and you can increase the pleasure that you're able to receive in this lifetime. And you deserve this pleasure in your lifetime. Like, you're not meant to just be in a lifetime of struggle and suffering that doesn't advance the sense of satisfaction and presence at all, right? It's supposed to be, I think, the opposite, that mostly we're supposed to be recovering, reclaiming, and experiencing our aliveness, and and then making less and less room for that suffering that could happen from the disembodied life. So I'm so grateful to you, and I want to read you this spell, which feels really related to your work and your being. And yeah, it's called the coming out spell. Come out. Yes. And that isn't the end. It is a first time to practice becoming yourself. Come out within yourself by noticing what your heart moves towards and what makes your root pulse. Come out into your true voice in a confession to a beloved who is surprised or who is never surprised. Come out by letting your gaze linger, your smile hint, your questions press. Come out with a new look that lets people know who you are, that fashion doesn't give a fuck, or fashion that cares very much. Come out with a kiss that takes your breath away, a kiss you didn't know was possible, kisses that pull fire from the core of the earth into your belly. Come out as a lover and be wild with your desires, or shockingly tame in your satisfactions, or both and ever shifting. Come out as a weirdo and be deliciously odd as you race away from constructs and deconstructs. Come out as one who doesn't know anymore what they were so sure about, but is delighted by the mystery. But don't stop there. Don't stop now. Keep changing. Keep going. Never aim for normal. Aim for you, utterly and dreamily you. Shake these bones. Everyone who tuned in today, thank you so much for listening to this show. I hope it is of service to your highest potential and your greatest pleasures. We are on Instagram at End of the World PC. You can make a sustaining donation to our show. We don't have any sponsors. We don't have any big funders. We rely on y'all. Y'all rely on us. We love the mutual aid of it all. Well, it's not quite mutual aid, but we love the mutual flow of resources of it all. So you can visit our page at patreon.com/endoftheworldshow. How to Survive the End of the World is produced and edited by the dreamy Zach Rosen. Music for today's show comes from Tunde Alanaran, Mother Cyborg, and the Bing Sense. Thank you so much, Z. Everyone go off and cast a spell.
Thank you.
Shake, 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 shake